coming is now here. We have a number of apologies. So shall we get started? Minutes of the last meeting. We have them here. Have you all read them? Happy? You happy?
I have read them and yes, I'm happy.
Okay. Right then, I will sign the minutes after the meeting then, Jim.
Thank you.
Item number two on the agenda, apologies.
Yes, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Aspin, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Roy James. Apologies from Councillor Leeson, who hasn't appointed a substitute. Councillor Loughran, who is substituted by Councillor Thorley. Councillor McNaughton, who is substituted by Councillor Nixon. And also the Cabinet Member, Councillor Cook.
Thank you. So therefore, move on to officers' reports, please.
The Civil Lords did plan to be here, however he was taken sick today, so he can't attend to present his reports.
But so at least we've got the main man.
I'll do my best. So in front of us, the first document is the external audit plan for the year coming ahead. It covers off things like the scope, the general approach they're going to be taking towards us, our responsibilities, and in the particular areas of risk that might come up around the statement and what have you. It also highlights the money arrangements, which we've done a lot of work around because of the Section 24 that we had in place. So it's worth noting that Section 24 has now been removed from Stafford. It's specifically noted that it's been removed. So that's significant progress, and that's a nod towards the work we've done around our the BFM report we've been bringing to Audit Committee and to Council in general. So the progress we've been made through that has been significant enough for the auditors to remove that. We also brought our council today, which is the main purpose for this evening, so we are up to date with our account reporting. For transparency, you are going to get a letter from government saying that we were late on the accounting this time, but we were late because we had to do the public consultation. It took a full month. So while we got our accounts prepared in time by the 28th of February, we then had to do the consultation. We have had regular contact with MHCRG about this. They're extremely relaxed about the situation because we could show them our accounts were done, and they were also getting good feedback from our external auditors, who are also pleased with the work we've done on the audits. So they've checked our working papers, so while they are certified, they're aware of those.
As we've got a number of replacements for normal members, could you just go over who our auditors are and who the previous auditors were?
So our new auditors are sets. They're taking a slightly different approach to GT. So GT with their final year wanted to put all out there because essentially they want to get caught out by the new auditors, and that's part of the transition. Part of the reason why the BFM was a little harsh. But the new auditors are much more reasonable at the moment. They have a lot of confidence in the work they're doing. We have a good relationship with them. So that's Andy Reid and Michael Butler. We have worked with Andy Reid in the past. He was our auditor before Grantholms were appointed. So he's very familiar with Emma and the work of our finance team. So he takes a great deal of comfort from that as well.
Okay. Anybody, any questions to this stage? I think it's a major step forward. You've got a better relationship with the auditors who are not doing what our previous auditors did, just projecting their backsides. I do have this chesty cough, which I seem to have had ever since I caught COVID about 18 months ago. And we are getting on with getting some sense out of value for money, albeit perhaps a little slowly than we might want, but it is a hill to climb. Would you like me to go through it page by page, or will you just cover off areas, and if you've got any questions, raise them after our officer has given you the summary of what's happening? I would certainly prefer that, as there are 151 pages.
So in terms of the statement of accounts themselves, They're a great piece of work led by Emma, and we've got a really good consultative working for her. She's been able to acquire her services, and she'll be staying with us now until December. She's contracted with us. So we're doing, I guess, the back side of that is the accounts for this year have come together quite well as well.
Yeah.
We will have some challenges around IFRS 16 implementation, which I'm sure the auditors would have flagged, which is the treatment of leases and the pricing within those. They're going to be coming on balance sheet. So that's a massive piece of work for us. There's question marks about how if we'll be able to get compliant along with those, but that's for next year's accounts. So for this year's accounts, you can see that we've included the outturn position here, and the capital outturn as well, from the previous year. And you can see that's all back to the CI.
If there's any page you want us to look at in particular, could you give us a page number and then just perhaps talk us through some numbers?
Yeah, so page, I go with the bottom ones, 37 and 39.
Yeah.
So you can see here the main areas of spend we have as per the CI. So I want to make the point I'm making to members is the difference between outturn report and final accounts and statement accounts. So 37 and 39 are things you'll be familiar with in the outturn, because we brought that report through. But if you are to go to page 46, the comprehensive income and expense statement, in the private sector, these would largely be the same, because what you report on your outturn position is the same as your position throughout the year. For us, we adjust our outturn position quite heavily for a number of statutory instruments, and you can pick that up from page. The expenditure funding analysis that is on page 35. So page 35 moves you from those first two pages of outturn position to the CIES on page 46. And the reason I highlight this is I frequently get this in I have had this in previous council meetings where people say the CIES bottom line isn't what you've reported, that's the amount of money we should have. It's not. This is heavily adjusted for things like depreciation. For the various IAS and IFRS accounting tools we have in place. So you'll see the lease adjustments. You'll also see borrowing adjustments going through the CIS. So that's not real money, it's just purely an accounting exercise. So the first ones I showed you there, the real position for the council, you can take from that. The EFA is how you can reconcile from those figures to the comprehensive income and expenditure statements. The movement in reserve statements, again, is a technical exercise more often than not on page 47, and that moves across your depreciation, it moves in and out things, your capital adjustment account, so your minimum revenue provision for principal elements, and that feeds through your lease arrangements. But it's important to note that the bottom line on this, the total general fund balances and your working balances in earmark reserves, you can live from this set of accounts. So when members ask me questions about how much have we got in reserves, you can look at the reserves note in here, and that will tell you what we genuinely have in reserves as at that moment in time. So that is something you can use for questions.
So if I was looking for how good our balance sheet is, and I looked at the balance on 31st of March 24, under total usable reserves of 51 million, that would be a realistic number, would it?
So the total general fund balance, the note underneath, I've added a line now, 31st of March, 39 million. So you'd use a 39.6 million, because we're still accounting for some of those adjustments.
Right.
So we're looking at that. And that does tie back nicely to, check this out from the public, when we bought the town hall and we did the report there, we did the balance position. So I wanted to make sure that we had a little note under some of these now so that you guys can start to tie through the information in the various bits of the accounts.
Yep.
So there are 151 pages of largely technical jargon, but I started to include these little notes underneath them and little lines here and there for you guys and our non-technical and non-accounting end users, so you can start to reconcile back the figures, so it's a bit less confusing, I'm hoping.
Yep. I was hoping you were going to say, no, that's the wrong number, the real number's 93 million.
Oh, I love that. So yeah, finally not. And you can see note 27 on page 84. The total reserve position, so you can see that 51 there. Well, obviously, some of that we don't have access to in the same way.
Yeah.
But you can see that 39, 36 plus the 249. And you've got the capital receipts reserve and the capital grants unapplied reserves underneath. They make up that difference to the figure you're suggesting.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping now, as we get this with these little bits underneath and adding these sentences, and Em's been really good at this for me with our new accounting, trying to make them much more user friendly.
Yeah.
I know that they have been a bit opaque in previous years, and we'll push a bit harder again this year. But I think the important thing, that the ones I wanted to highlight really were, the reserve position was robust. It is in line with the information I gave you for the purchase of the tank, which was significant, and it all comes together quite nicely now. That hopefully you've seen that flow from the outturn position I brought through to the statement of accounts, to the kind of reports that are coming through the council from other service areas. You can see where we're pulling from reserves, the scale of their ask, and how it relates back to our financial position. I think it's starting to paint that picture and tell that story. You can start to see our gearing levels, you can start to see our free cash flows and elements from the cash flow statement. It's starting to make that narrative. I'm hoping we can take that a bit further this year.
Yeah.
So I don't have any specific questions on any areas in here. The fixed assets elements, just ignore that. None of that makes any sense. It's not real. So don't worry about property, plant and equipment entries in here. They're purely accounting entries or the PPE stuff.
Do we have any questions?
Recommendations on page 26, Chairman.
Recommendations then on page 26.
Can I ask a question? I don't know if I'm too far ahead here. On page 101, it's actual deposits with banks.
Yes.
Is that... That's 60 million, is it? That's cash in the bank, I take it, is it?
Yes.
That's actual money, yeah. Why is Santander the only one that seems to have a 180-day notice of fees attached to it?
It just depends which instrument we're using, which money market fund or which bank account we're using.
26,
Jim. That has that 180-day pullout. And it offers a slightly better rate because of the 180-day notice. We don't tend to go for those longer term. Moving forward, as interest rates are starting to fall away from us, we'll be trying to utilise our reserves in a slightly different fashion, because we're not going to be making the returns on investment anymore that we have been in the past. So we may be looking at locking away for longer to try and maintain that investment position. But we are guided by our external treasury advisors, who are on and close, who will be coming to meet you guys shortly to do a presentation and training session on treasury. Very good, and I'm sure there'll be guidance towards some different instruments moving forward.
Well, I hope so, because I've just been starting to do my inland revenue accounts, and I had four accounts that paid me 6%.
We tend not to achieve those kind of levels, but we can try.
Yeah.
We will aspire.
Yeah. Good. I don't want you guys to get too soft on this, you know. Okay, now, page 26, we are asked for the members to note 2.11, Statement of Accounts 23-24, Appendix 1, and 2.12, Findings of the External Auditor, Agenda Items 3, Bracket C, and 2.13, note the impact of the audit backlog legislation.
Move to note, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody second that? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that takes us on to agenda items 3C already.
It's page 117, Chairman.
117.
Building on the previous ones, it highlights the financial statements in the 23-24 audit, and that we took as per the audit and accounting audit regulations, which is 2015 amended, 31st May 2024, we issued our unaudited financial statements on the 27th of February 2025. So, because our date was the 28th, we did hit the 27th, but then we did have to do the consultation with the public. We had no questions from them, and we've got the letter here tonight for us to sign that off, so it does officially complete it. But as we said to MHCLG, the work was completed on time. We just didn't have the public consultation documents to look at it. I know it's splitting hairs, but I'm hoping that is reflected in the naughty step, as a number of councils didn't complete any of their accounts on time or publish them, and so it's still happening. So the executive summary, they undertook a column for the planning on page 124, so you can see what they were looking at and what they required to issue the initial report. The work they undertook in 2023-24 was we exercised the statutory instruments as per page 126. So it wasn't that they came and actually did any audit work with us on this. It really was to exercise that instrument. And you can see that while the prior year on 129, the prior year appeal on the statements, we have the statutory instruments. They have put their work on time constraints and profile of backstop means they can't complete it. They didn't, but taking into account the internal economy, the criteria of the ISA, so they issued the disclaimer of opinion. So that's quite important. They couldn't offer the assurance that they would like by going through the backlog, which we will have to talk about when we decide if we're going to go through the reset of the assurance or not. And that's a big question that I'm sure will come up over the next year about whether we're going to try and reset the audit of the accounts or not this year. We had a plan that's reset it over about 4 or 5 year cycle. Tim and I sat down with them and worked that through in the past. Now with local government organisation adding additional pressure and resource strain, and the fact we've got large-scale regeneration projects and so on, we will have to make some calls about what we're going to do in the art of the possible and our prioritisation. We'll come back to that once we work closely with the auditors on what they're planning for 24-25.
Just as you've raised that issue, the local government reorganisation, if we don't have the reset, will that cause us a problem in the reorganisation? Because we'll effectively be selling ourselves with unaudited accounts.
It will be a challenge for the new organisation, yes, but it is not a challenge for us. So there are still backstop provisions for future years we can continue to take.
Yeah.
But yes, it will be a challenge for the new organisation trying to consolidate accounts that haven't been audited.
How many other authorities are going to be in the same state?
So, off the top of my head, the county council took the backstop because they couldn't get the pension elements through. Canic naturally in the same position because there was as us. I'm not sure if Tarrant did or not, but there'll be a few of us.
Yeah. Sounds like about half, at least.
It could end up there. It depends where the authorities lie.
Yeah. And do we have any feelings from our chief executive about how that will help or hinder the negotiations?
In this local government organisation, I don't think we're on that page at all yet. I think we're still on first principles in terms of that.
Yeah.
Clearly there are some different work streams that have been set up at the moment, and one of them will involve the Section 151 officers, and I dare say that is one of the issues that needs to be resolved. Mm.
Well, it is indeed, I think, because we're in this position at the moment of not being able to meet statutory dates, along with a lot of other people, because we're short on resources. And now the government's given another resource demand on us, and it's how the government is going to react to tell us which is the most important one. So who will be responsible for telling the government that they've got us in a problem?
You've reflected back to the government on a range of issues that the problems that we have with their current direction. But I suspect they've got lots of other pressures too, so we'll see what they decide.
Yeah. Okay, so it's one that we have to be aware of as the Accounts Committee. Is there anything else we ought to be aware of?
Not in that vein. Ultimately, I'm responsible to this authority as a 151. I'm not responsible to a hypothetical authority that may or may not exist in the future.
True.
So my priorities are the financial resilience of this organisation here and now,
yep,
preparing the accounts in line with the statutory guidance. So if we do take the backstop, we will still comply with the legislation.
Yep.
It's just a question mark around the audit process, and that's a problem for the future. So it just depends on those elements, and there have been murmurings that there may be an impact on future funding if you don't do your accounts and things. I haven't seen anything concrete around that as yet. It was like a line in one of the letters.
Just to kind of follow up, kind of talking about this, like from a priority perspective, like which of these is our priority? I think if there is a situation where funding becomes dependent on it, then I think the completing a council is going to rush up the priority list quite quickly. And I think there's an internal question of which of these at this point is our priority, and I can see that's a thing that's in flux with the context of where does resource need to be applied in terms of major projects or kind of our day-to-day, the accounting kind of process, other things in the organisation. I think there's, I think making sure that there is that balance. I think that what you said at the beginning around the kind of the speed of achieving value for money. I think that there's, it feels like there's some that have been, kind of like implemented Q1 2025, those types of things, and the speed of some of these things.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Kind of demonstrates where they're sitting currently in our priorities and thinking about where they need to.
Yeah. We just asked to receive this report. We don't have to pass any comments on it at this point in time. So would anyone like to make a proposal?
Move to receive, Mr. Chairman.
And seconded. Which takes us, Jim?
That concludes the meeting.
To conclude the meeting. Unless anyone else has got anything to raise?
How are we doing with the recruiting for the NAMPS team? If you remember 2 years ago, you said you put 150,000 in one to get new staff. Where are we with that?
So we've got still M, and we've got consultant in, and that's for sure, but still there. Went out to try and recruit the two posts, the senior posts underneath Emma. There's nothing in the market taking it. So we went down to the layer below that, and we have recruited two people into those posts so far. So they started with us, they're doing all right, we're training them up. So that's pleasing. But for the tiers, the more senior tiers, with the level of flux we've got with local governments and the salaries on offer, we're really going to struggle for that. So we just have to accept, recruit downwards, and try and plug that gap as and where we can.
So is that going to put more pressure on the top level?
Yes. It does push a lot of pressure onto Emma and I.
So you've got your bed here, have you?
Oh, I live very close by, so it's not far away.
You feel the organisation can cover it?
I feel like I don't have a choice, but we did try. I'm hoping circumstances may be changing with some of the council changes and their working arrangements, so the market may become a little bit more buoyant than it has been recently with people who may not want to work in office, if that does become something they do. So I'm hoping to start poaching.
Okay. What about part-time working? Is that an option or not?
If yes.
For the level that you need?
I'd accept part-time working, yeah. I have no problems at all with that. If they come in and bring the right... not a day, that wouldn't work for me, but 2.5 days or something, fine, they can come and do that.
Can I just unpick, is that the potential expectation that the county council may be pushing towards people being in the office 5 days a week? That
perhaps, or organisations in general?
Organisations in general, right?
I'm thinking of split working, i.e. One job, two people. Working at it, one for 2.5 days, the other one for 2.5 days, as opposed to, working from home.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And with that, I would like them on site a little as well, and that kind of level of seniority.
Yeah, they need to be on site.
Yeah. Good. Any other business? Well, declare the meeting closed then, Jim.